we're recording. We've started. Hi, Shay. How are you?
Oh, we're going back to the hi, Shay, hi, Ian vibe. Well, that's wonderful. Love it. Yeah. And Ian, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
About as good as one can be. That's how good I am. Just like infallibly fantastic.
Amazing.
So Shay, we've spent the past 2 weeks here studying sports. We've been going over baseball. And I learned a lot. I basically went through the entire history of baseball. I am now baseball's historical masterpiece of a human being. I can name everything but the names of any players playing now, as we learned in our interview with Nick. You know, I just wanted to kind of hit you with some of this baseball pop quiz goodness. And I want to see if you could tell me who is the name. What is the name of the current home run, like first placer? Hold on, there's a better way to put this. What is the name of the guy who's hit the most home runs? Home run record holder.
Nice, you got there. Well, you did such a good job setting me up. A nice slow and steady pitch. I'm going to go ahead and knock it out of the park with the obvious answer, Babe Ruth.
So for a long time, I'm not going to call you wrong. No, you are. Wait, you're wrong. You're wrong.
I'm wrong.
That's incorrect. Okay. So he's third. All
right. Wow.
Yeah, he's third. He held that record for quite some time. It was impressive how long he held on to it for. And then second place is Hank Aaron. God, okay. I hope that's right. And number one, you want to guess again? Like it's a modern guy. It's a modern baseball player. And
Mark McGwire.
Close again, Barry Bonds.
Mm.
And there's a lot of controversy surrounding this because he got there
with
on
steroids.
So a lot of people saying, you know, it shouldn't count. He should have retired right after he broke the record too. It's funny because a lot of clubs basically wanted to see him get the number. Like the Giants were like, hell yeah, get it, break the record. And then they cut him and no one signed him because they were like, all right, you know what? We let you kind of cheat to get here. It was exciting. It was selling tickets, but now you're no good to us. And they let him loose and he never played ball again.
Wow. And he still holds
the record, the dirtiest record in all of sports.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is crime pays.
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to Camp Reeducation, an immersive boot camp into the world we thought we knew. We are your hosts, Ian and Shay, concluding our two-week immersion into the world of baseball.
So, like, kind of coming into this from that question in the beginning, like, do you think he should still, should he keep the record? I mean, like, should they strip him of the title?
I have no idea, man. You know, and it's weird because, like, I know this isn't, like, at all what you were thinking about when you asked this question, but, like, my understanding of steroids are they're just, that's just hormones, right?
They're just a little helper. Yeah, it's just but a way they to give your body more hormones than you naturally produce to give you superhuman abilities. Totally okay. Fine.
Well, so my question is, how does this relate to trans athletes, then? If you are taking hormones... and you want to be an athlete, then like that, it just seems like there's a potential for opening up like a weird, not weird, but just like a very difficult question to answer.
So if I can kind of understand where you're coming from, just so you're basically saying that like a trans athlete could, in theory, in this instance, it would be a F to M, a female to male transition, because they would be taking testosterone. And then their argument for testing positive for steroids would be like, oh, I'm just like doing a correction for the lack of hormones that I don't produce. And it's just part of my transition. Like, is that kind of what you're saying?
That's my very ignorant understanding. Like, I'm not sure if it's the same hormones, if it's just testosterone that you're pumping in. Like, I don't know anything about steroids or the hormones you're given when you're transitioning. I guess it's just testosterone, but I honestly have no idea.
I don't know. You know what? It's so funny. Like, I learned a lot about like the steroid scandal of baseball, like through the late 80s, 90s and early, it's aughts, right? Like 2000s,
yeah.
Early aughts. I guess it's because it's close to 8. I was like, hold on, wait a minute.
No,
I was like, because we call it the 80s.
That's not. I'm pretty sure it's a math thing. Like the aughts are like zeros or like aught. That's just, or like a navy or like a sailor thing.
They ought to come up with some better numbers. All right. So anyway, Ayo! The double O's, the AOs. That's my new proposal.
Okay.
I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. God, so much to anticipate in sports in the coming like 10, 20 years. Lots of interesting philosophical questions that will arise.
And a lot of interesting questions that are going to arise in the rest of this episode. But before we get to that, we would be remiss if we didn't remind you of, or I guess inform you in the first place, of today's featured artist, which you can hear below us right now. That is, of course, Sean McVary. With his beautiful song, Yellow Is Her Color. You can go ahead and hear the entire song at the end of the episode. Definitely do it, because it's amazing. And so with that, I guess we can dive into what we've been doing this past week. Ian, I think I got you beat in terms of really diving in to the spirit of the camp and the spirit of baseball, because I went flesh and blood to a Yankees game. I was in the stadium. I got Cracker Jacks. I don't think I told you this yet. I bought Cracker Jacks. I bought peanuts. I got shit-faced. Like, I did the whole fucking baseball experience, soup to nuts.
That's pretty good. Soup to nuts. Where does that expression come from?
Are you distracting from your defeat here? Because
no, actually, hold on. Soup to nuts. I mean, like, was this a thing, like, where there was nuts? Did nuts used to go in the soup? Like, was nuts a common, like, soup opener, or?
You're not going to get out of defending yourself against your crippling defeat for this weekend by
this. We're coming back to this. You know, okay. Yeah, that's, you know, Shay, that's all well and good. I'm super happy for you. But, like, you're also forgetting that was your first baseball game. I've been to baseball games before.
I'm sorry. I didn't see you go to one this week.
I've already been.
Rest the phone. I rest the phone on the hook. The call is over.
All right, well, I didn't think I needed to like rehash that experience. I will say I did look, but I guess I don't know. You know, I'm in Boston. Baseball's popular here. The tickets were out fucking rageous. Mm. It was insane how much tickets cost. I remember looking online. The cheapest seats available were like $190.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, we paid for, I think, $20 or $30 tickets each, my girlfriend and I, and then definitely snuck into the $500 ticket section. So we were like,
we were
pretty close to, we were between first base and home. And like, we were not that far. I mean, we were like one section up. So it wasn't like the ground section, but it was like one up. And I mean, we were like terrified. We're like snuck in. We're like, oh God, they're going to catch us and they're going to throw us out. And I'm never going to have seen even one baseball game. But overall, it was a great experience. But I guess other than that, we did a lot of fantasy baseball too. You know, we've been competing in our drafts, more or less. And I guess, Ian, it's worth mentioning probably now that I also beat you in the fantasy baseball draft. So I think you're 2-0 right now.
Yeah, but I will say, you know, hey, actually, the weekend's not over, all right?
That's
I can
true.
Still beat you. It's like tomorrow is technically tomorrow. The end of the immersion. I could kick your ass.
Is there a game
happen.
Tomorrow? I honestly have no idea.
There's a game every fucking day in baseball, right? If there's anything we've learned from this immersion, it's that from spring to fall, baseball never stops. And you know what? I got to say, that's actually pretty fucking impressive, all right?
I
looked this up. I've got the numbers right here, okay? And the average baseball season, if anyone knows anything about baseball, is going to be like, so what? Fuck you. Shut up. But for those of you who don't, this might be impressive. There's 162 baseball games in a season. That's fucking crazy. Before I was crazy. Like, baseball players, they don't deserve that much money to sit around and do it. They're not sitting around doing nothing. They're doing a lot of fucking something. 162 days worth like of something.
Wait, is that them playing every... That's not the same team playing 162
games, We looked at the schedule. No, I think every team plays 162 games. Well, and we looked at the schedule.
That's not
how I
understood it.
It was like 6 days on, 1 day off for these guys. It was fucking insane.
That is pretty insane.
Yeah, so 162 baseball games versus, I think, 82 basketball games. And what is it, like 17 regular season football games, maybe three more if you get to the Super Bowl?
Oh, wait, I looked it up. Because I didn't believe you. But you're right. And that's insane. That's actually really fucking insane.
That's fucking crazy. So, you know what?
Yeah.
I tipped my cap, which is, you know what? another cool thing I learned this these past 2 weeks as well, and
that
I didn't really
baseball.
Just how much of like English idioms come from baseball. Like baseball was so like impactful on the culture, it literally changed the language. So
that is insane.
Think about what we called a hand job before baseball. What do we call it now? I got to first base. What did you call a hand job before baseball?
I don't think a hand job is first base.
A hand job is first base.
No, that making out is first base.
A hand job is second base.
No, a hand job is third base.
No, third base is a blow job. Home is sex.
Everyone knows it's French feel finger fuck.
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the remedial, no, let me get this out. In the remedial middle school that you attended, that was the case, okay? In my very progressive, sexually advanced middle school, I'm pretty sure, it was kissing, hand job, blow job, and then followed by making sweet, sweet love.
I'm going to look it up now because...
You know what's so interesting? I don't know what this is about us. I love to say the F word, but in the context of having sex, I like to say had sex, made love. I don't like to be like, we're fucking. We fucked.
Mm.
I don't know why that's too strong for me.
Okay, well, let me tell you. This is from Go Ask Alice, which is, I guess, like a...
What the hell is Go Ask Alice?
Oh, I was about to tell you. it's for some reason, this is on the Columbia University, the one in New York. This is on their domain name. This is like goaskalice.columbia.edu. And they say that first base equals kissing, including open mouth or French kissing. Second base is petting above the waist, including touching, feeling, and fondling the chest, breasts, and nipples. And third base is petting or orally stimulating below the waist, including touching, feeling, or fondling the vagina, clitoris, penis, or testicles. So I contend and maintain that third base is a hand job. We're both right. But you said first base was a hand job.
I made the correction. All right.
Fair. You're right.
Okay. Hold on. Let's see here. So Urban Dictionary, who is a source I trust more than Ask Alice. Second base. God, my internet is going so slow right now.
It's because it doesn't want you to have to suffer. Or it wants you to suffer more every second.
I mean, God, talk about drama. Okay, so while this is loading, because you never answered my question, you fucking sidetracked me with that. I don't know where that question even came from. Do you think they should revoke Barry Bonds' steroid-powered home run record?
Wow, you really brought us back. I have no idea. Like I said, I have no idea. It's a question I don't want to answer because as soon as we start talking about athletes and hormones, I get uncomfortable about saying something that I might later regret. Out of ignorance.
Okay. Well, let's just say to make it a hypothetical then. Let's say steroids isn't hormones. Steroids is like it's a million nanorobots that go into it's the radioactive spider juice from Spider-Man. Okay. If this is indeed the case, do they revoke the record?
Yes, definitely. Unequivocally, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so weird. Like when he testified before Congress, he was, you know, I think the thing that he had said was like, steroid won't help you, you know, hit a home run or something like that. He's like, if you couldn't hit a home run without steroids, you're not going to be able to hit a home run with steroids, was kind of like his argument. He's like, I was going to hit the home run anyway. The home run just went farther.
Then why was he doing it in the first place? What a dumb argument. I'm mad at him.
Yeah, go. I don't know. It's really fun. Yeah, never mind. All right, there's so many things to talk about today. And we're very excited because after, you know, 2 weeks of diving into this, we got really lucky. We had the fortune of speaking to two really knowledgeable individuals. We had the pleasure of speaking with a Mr. Nick Pollock. Just like Jackson, got it right. Okay, fantastic. Of Pitcher List. And for anybody listening, that is Pitcher List without the. He was very clear to revoke the article in that. Nick, incredibly knowledgeable guy. He was, I think he said he was an ex-college pitcher and then a pitching coach. I think he said he's been on ESPN or something like that.
Washington Post. I think he's been everywhere, and I'm pretty sure his website's like a pretty big deal. So, like, not to brag, but we got you some really impressive experts this week, which I guess leads us perfectly to Ray Murphy, who is a active contributor or like part owner of Baseball
Manager
HQ.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah, I mean he's a big. He's from there, okay?
That's a big deal.
Yeah, so he's been doing it for about over 20 years. Like before, the most interesting thing from my perspective, at least like talking to Ray, was just realizing that Ray has been doing fantasy baseball before it was an internet phenomenon, which was actually so weird to think about that he was doing it before you could just get these stats on ESPN or wherever. So two
he said
incredibly
they used,
knowledgeable
they used
people.
To come. He said they used to come in the mail.
That's was, so fascinating.
Yeah, which is again just it's so I don't know. It's funny to just even think about like how spoiled we are in terms of even having the luxury of being disinterested in something that we find too slow that used to be significantly slow.
Got it. Just a different time. I guess speaking about things that come in the mail, let's go ahead and hand it off to this week's sponsor, and then we'll jump back in and hear everything we learned today from our amazing guests. Take it away, sponsor. Are you a child? But like a weak, pathetic child. How will a weakling like you ever get an athletic scholarship to college? You'll never outsmart all those Chinese and Indian kids. There's literally billions. Introducing Flintstone Anabolic Steroids for kids. The first steroids marketed directly to children and their weak little bodies and minds. All your heroes are rich athletes who do steroids, and now you can be too, if you're lucky. Flintstones Anabolic Steroids, the opportunity of your steroid-shortened lifetime.
Anyway, so we have this first clip here from Nick, who was, I gotta say, he's got a podcast as well. Because I assume our listeners aren't super into baseball, go ahead and check it out. I don't anticipate us losing you, but please come back if you do go. So this first clip from Nick is basically about this idea that we're spoiled. You know, all these kids who have all these other sports like football and Olympic diving and archery, they're just too fast, all right? All these kids, they just want more and they want it now. But
I don't think those are the sports. I don't think those are the sports at all he was talking about.
I love it. You know, it's so funny. It's like baseball gets so much shit, but like it's still so much better than fucking like... You know, can you imagine if I was like, hey, man, we're going to the game and then I drove you to an archery competition?
You know, honestly, I would probably be more interested in just like the weirdness of going to an and honestly, like, it's so funny because this week, like, I've been really struggling with understanding like why it is that I am still like, even in this camp, like still so apprehensive about like fully like letting go of something to like giving myself into baseball and sports. And it's like something just like I just don't want to like it, you know? And like, I don't know, I'm totally derailing it, but I want to touch on this later, but it's because it's been such a weird feeling, you know, and like, I imagine I would really actually like going to an archery game. And I think this is actually why I like foosball too, because no one else really likes it. You know, it's not like a bro-y thing, or it's not that popular.
You're such a hipster.
It's a hipster thing. I like hipster sports. Hipster.
Yeah, I'm into archery.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, man. I just like, if too many people like it, it's like, how cool could it be?
All right. But let's play this damn clip, all right? Clip manager, play it.
So I approach it with a handshake, right? A compromise for everybody listening, because I know how everyone feels about it, and I understand why you think it's boring. I get it. There's more time in between everything. It's the innate problem. Like right now, everything is so instant at our fingertips. You know, we're spoiled that we don't have to deal with 3 minutes of commercials every time we want to watch a show anymore. You know, we can just kind of just watch it. It's there. We don't have to wait for it to be 7:30 on a Wednesday night. It's like we are so ready for instant consumption. And baseball, being the most human sport, it has built-in tension all the time. Every single pitch, something happens. No, it didn't. And you got to wait 20, 30 seconds for something else. It's long. It does this the entire way through. And then it does it for 6 months. But the thing is, when you pay attention to it, you realize that those 30 seconds can be unbelievably tense and you're thinking along with the batter and the pitcher, what is he going to throw? Where is he going to put it? Okay, I just did this. What information did I just give him by swinging at this one? It means that I'm going to be swinging at the really fast stuff. So if he throws something slower, am I going to be able to catch up to that? Am I going to be able to adjust? What if he puts it inside instead of away? All of these things are going through the batter's head while the pitcher's just like, I want to throw it inside, but I haven't been able to do that. Am I going to be able to do that? What did the catcher call? Oh, he went away. I don't know if I can do that. Let's see if he can execute it. Okay, he didn't do it. All right, what's the next one? You know, and you just keep going through this process. If you have the full understanding of both players in this, it can be unbelievably satisfying. It's such a human, wonderful sport, and it just makes me so happy. It really does.
You know, one thing I'll say about that for sure is he has so much passion. It's so contagious. Like hearing him talk this, like, God, like, I'm just like, man, I wish I was this passionate about this thing. Like, I love being passionate about things, but like the things that I'm passionate about are so remarkably different than this. Like, I honestly can't imagine caring this much about baseball.
There's almost like an Asperger-y vibe to it, you know, just like I feel like I get this every time not him.
Just like baseball. I was like, what?
No, I'm like, no, like like, you know how they say that people with Asperger's, like, they can't tell when someone's like disinterested, but I feel like with everyone I know in my life that loves baseball, like, they will just kind of like talk to you and talk to you and talk to you about baseball, and you're just like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's funny. I honestly still don't know how that's not offensive to him, like, saying the Asperger's thing.
I'm not saying he... All right, you know what? I retract that analogy. This is apparently not the time and place for it. Nick, I do not mean... I meant, like, I'm talking about baseball fandom generally, because it's like, again, there's this... It's if you went to a baseball game and somebody was telling you about, like, the invention of... the history of the yard meter or something like that, or like why the refs have uniforms or black and white stripes horizontal, you'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm here to watch people fucking tackle each other. But baseball fans are just like, they're like, oh, like, this number actually means this. And even though he's getting, you know, strikes here, his record is still this. So it's incredible. So statistically speaking, his, you know, next time or the next time at bat, he should be able to hit a home run. It's really exciting. And it's just like, I don't care about, like, I don't want to do the math to anticipate when this guy's going to hit the ball. I just want to see someone hit the ball.
Mm. It is interesting, like, the way he talks about it is it just, like, selling the idea of, like, a slower lifestyle is almost, like, what he's talking about. It's weird because, like, we definitely saw this in Total Fucking Enlightenment Camp, you know, just, like, let's slow everything down. It's like the bros version of meditation is baseball. You're, like, semi-present, and you're, like, there's still, like, some amount of, like, thinking involved, but, like, it sounds like the idea of this is, like, it's intentionally mindless in the meditative sense of the word.
You know why I think we're suspicious of this?
Why?
Is because I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said, like, this trying to sell us on this, like, slower style or the slower lifestyle or the slower pace of life. It's because you and I are from the South, and we left the South because it was a slower lifestyle. We literally left the land of front porch rockers on plantations and, like, old white men in white suits drinking sweet tea going, hot today, hot yesterday, supposed to be hotter tomorrow. Like, we went to supposedly, like, two of the country's bigger, faster paced cities to kind of escape that. And, like, the idea of somebody trying to sell me on a game that replicates this slow Southern philosophy on how life should be approached, I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, I was raised in that. All right. I'm like Bane trying to escape baseball. It's like, you are merely born in boredom. I was molded by it.
I struggle to imagine that the reason I'm rejected to it or, like, repulsed by it is because it reminds me of, like, a Louisiana South, which is nothing like the South I experienced, and I don't think it's like the South that you experienced either. The man that you described...
There were pockets!
The man that you described is a man I have never met. So, I don't know what to tell you.
I'm pretty sure I just described my Uncle John, all right? Yeah. Like, if only we had won the war. Uncle John, I gotta go, all right?
You know, so, it's interesting. He, one of the things that Nick talked about too, and it really stuck out to me, especially this last time hearing it, is he called baseball the most human sport. What do you think? You think that's fair?
You know what? I love that approach, and I love that I got to talk to Nick about that, because yeah, I think honestly, like, that's a thing that made me really change my attitude about baseball. Like, will I start watching it? Probably not, but to know, I appreciate what he kind of said. Like, it's really just a battle between like these two people. It's a battle. It's like a head game between the pitcher and the batter. And being able to kind of reflect on and think about baseball as this game of like two people kind of facing off, like, that's fucking cool. And like, that really made me kind of rethink baseball a lot. And I'm like, I actually love that. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. I also think that, I mean, like, after learning about the history of baseball as well, like, it was supposed to be kind of, baseball used to apparently supposed to be a gentleman's agreement between like the pitcher and the batter. The pitcher's going to be like, I'm going to throw the ball at you and you're going to try to hit it. And like, that's agreement. And then I remember like with the invention of the curveball, like, it was apparently you weren't allowed to do it. It was deception.
Right.
Like, the president of Harvard wrote a letter and he was like, Harvard men, don't deceive. There are no curveballs thrown in our baseball games.
Right.
It's not a Northern accent. I probably should have done like a John F. Kennedy guy, but I think that's fair. I actually love that idea, and that did kind of make baseball a lot, like, significantly cooler to me.
Which aspect in particular are you saying made it cooler?
Just the mind game between the pitcher and the batter.
Mm. Is that what humanity is, though? Just like you versus another person? Because I think of like humanity as like, and if he's calling it the most human sport, is it like, in that sense, I'd almost think it's like a sport where you battle randomness and, you know, like, it's not you versus another man. It's not like man versus man. It's like man versus, I mean, I guess like this is like something they talk about like in the development of like literature over time, right? It's like at first it was like man versus man, then it was like man versus nature, and then now like all the books are about like man versus him or herself, you know, and like
technology
or technology and stuff like that. So like, I don't know, I feel like this is just stuck in almost like a medieval aspect then, like if it's like man versus man, batter versus pitcher, like gladiatorial, I don't know how you say that word, but you know, it's like, it's almost like that, where it's like a fight to the death between a man throwing a little leather ball with another man with a wooden stick. You know, like, is that what makes it human? I don't think that's what he means when he says it, at least.
You know, it's also in that clip, he did talk about like the head game between the batter and the pitcher. And I guess like for me, it's like, okay, like, because in a way, I don't know, it is, you know, it's kind of like negative capability, wherein, you know, which in literature was this idea of like supreme literature, the author has the ability to kind of like, like radical empathy, totally place yourself in the mind of another person. And it's like the batter and the hitter, or the pitcher and the batter, are both kind of trying to do that. Like, the batter is trying to anticipate what pitch the pitcher is gonna throw, and the pitcher is trying to anticipate like what pitch the batter might fall for. So I don't know, there was something about that to me that's like, okay, I dig that. As opposed to the most human game, for me, I think maybe he was talking about the history. Like, I think it's like, at least in America, it's the most historically significant, like, enriched game. And maybe because of like the parade of characters throughout history that helped kind of develop the game. I don't know. Maybe that's the human element that he was talking about. But I think that's a good question.
I'm curious, because I don't know. I think he's talking about the slowness in itself, you know, which is interesting. To touch briefly on your point about getting in each other's head, how is that like any different than rock, paper, scissors?
I think it's higher stakes.
Is that
it's higher stakes, so it's more dramatic. I mean, I tell you what, though, if we created a new version of rock, paper, scissors this fall on NBC, I looked over here like the camera was over here, this fall on NBC, rock, paper, scissors, or we'll kill your family. And there's two people coming together. Wait, hold on, let me pitch this show. There's two people coming together. It's called Rock, Scissors, Papers, or We'll Kill Your Family. And you do rock, scissors, papers, and it's, you know, one man or woman. and their family is behind them, and they do three bouts of rock, paper, scissors, and if you lose, NBC will kill your family. That would be way more intense than baseball.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like to the stakes point, then like what's the difference? Like it just seems like maybe it's not the stakes that are different. It's like the level of athleticism that you have to do. Like once you get a certain point of baseball skill, then it becomes like just an elevated rock, paper, scissors, which is funny because you this is like totally non sequitur. It's so fascinating. Like two of the times you said rock, paper, scissors in that you said rock, scissors, paper. Or something, which was so interesting. Like I've never heard it said that, and then you reverted back to the normal way, which is I don't know.
I think I was just excited about my new pilot coming to NBC this fall. Rock, scissors, paper, or kill your family. Did I do it again?
Rock, scissors, paper. I think you did. Like, what is happening?
Okay. Well, maybe it's because it's a new thing. It's not just rock, paper, scissors. It's rock, paper, scissors, or we'll kill your family. So it's the addition of the family endangerment at the end that causes the linguistic slip up.
It's actually a sex act from Dwayne the Rock Johnson in which he scissors a stack of papers.
Oh my god.
Anyway,
did you look that up on Urban Dictionary?
Yeah, I just had to make sure. Well, actually I looked it up on his Instagram pictures, and there's a lot of informative posts about it.
Enough. We got a lot of show. We got a lot of show left. We got a lot of clips left. We have a lot of Nick's ideas. But anyway, regardless. Shit, I am losing it. Nick was trying his best to find an answer for us about like why the game has continued to succeed in spite of all of these scandals that have kind of dogged it for hundreds of years, that like there's always a new one kind of emerging and reinventing itself. We're just like, fucking how does baseball come back year after year like a biblical plague? And as per usual, as is the case with this fucking eloquent guy, his answer was eloquent as fuck. So let's go ahead and give it a shot.
It's just, it's not me, it's the sport. I'm telling you. But what I'm getting at with baseball is it's an expression of everything that you go through, right? Like the ones that are successful are the ones that are constantly able to be consistent. I mean, you guys know this with the podcast, the most successful thing is just being there on time every single week and constantly putting it out and not missing an episode with energy or anything. Everything needs to be consistently good, and that's how you grow and succeed. Baseball is exactly the same way. You can have these glorious months. You know, anyone that knows fantasy baseball will know Brian LaHare back in 2014 and the most ridiculous first half ever, and then just did nothing the rest of his career. You know, and that's not someone who's going to succeed. It's about the consistency, ups and downs. Every fan base is going to go through this. You're going to have new names, so many new players. Oh, this guy's coming up. He throws 100 miles per hour. This is amazing. Is he going to succeed? I don't know. He does well today, but I don't know tomorrow. There are so many things that change and flow, and it's so comforting to be in that stadium with all these people that are going through the same thing you are. You have your traditions. Yeah, at Yankee Stadium, you've got the subway game and the ball in the hat. You have the seven-inning stretch. You have the bleacher creatures doing the roll call. You have the PC Richard and Son jingle for every strikeout. The workaholic theme, if you've noticed, there's like a banging bells every single time they cross a home plate with a run. There are all of these elements that make it alive and like you're a part of it, you know, a cult, really. I very much believe that this is why baseball succeeds. And it's not going to go away because of that. And once people really understand it, really grasp like all of these little mini storylines with every single team, it is an addicting soap opera. It's amazing.
I just want to walk back that earlier Asperger's statement and just clarify one more time that I was talking about baseball fandom generally and not our guest.
I feel like you're digging your heel, or not digging, you're digging your grave even more, because he's like one of the biggest of the baseball fandom. Like he has like made an entire career off of like obsession with baseball.
Yeah, and I'm saying it sounds people's obsession, not just him, people's obsession with baseball sounds a little Asperger-y.
Cool, bro. Super cool.
Thank you.
So do you want to touch on his point as well or not?
Yes, absolutely. I was going to say as well, I also think I see why you're maybe a little suspicious of the sport, because I think he kind of hits the nail on the head. There's a little bit of like a hive mind thing. Like when he says like it's a cult, I do it like, no, but like really, like I think that there is such an identitarian aspect to baseball, more so than similar to football in Europe. I think like the fervor that you see for a sports team in Europe that is absolutely part of your identity is very much what baseball is here. And I do think that football has gotten to that this level of, in terms of like intense, extreme fandom. But like, as we learned from Nick, the football season is a lot shorter. So you're football guy for a lot less time than you are baseball guy, you know?
Mm. So just to make sure, so you're saying like it's cult-like because it's like another sport. So like in the sense that like, people like soccer. It's like, it's crazy. They like it almost as much as other people like this other sport.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Let me break it down a lot more clearly. Okay. Like, I don't know. Football identity is huge in like Europe. Like if you look at just fucking, you know, football hooligans and so, like if they lose a game, they'll burn down your city. If they win a game, they'll burn down your city. Okay? Yeah, it doesn't matter. So it's like, no, but I think people make baseball, like baseball fans make baseball such like an aspect of their self-concept. Like being the fan of this team becomes a very fundamental part of like who they are, to the extent that they're like, you know, if they stood up in a classroom and they're like, tell us something about yourself, you're like, my name is Timmy, I'm a Red Sox fan, I love shooting dolphins with a machine gun, like whatever else they're into.
Baseball fans do love shooting dolphins.
I don't know. And they're unrelated in this. I don't know. I could have gone with like a normal guy. Like I have a garden. I love the Red Sox. I went with the guy that shoots dolphins with an AK-47. They're not all like that, but I'm sure there's one.
Well, you know what's funny is like, that is closer to the stereotype of like a sports fan than the non-sports fan. Like I imagine people who love sports probably are more likely to love guns than people who don't like sports. Do you think that's fair?
Huh. You know, I don't know. That's such a large thing to generalize. But I'm also inclined to agree with you.
I mean, obviously they're totally unrelated. Like I don't know if either of our guests this week like were
have guns.
Hey,
that's such a weird fucking segue. Look, I'm not entirely sure, but based on this new system I've developed, that people who like sports have guns. I think both of our guests have guns.
Hey, Nick, Ray, definitely reach out to us and let us know so we can put an addendum to a future episode about your stance on guns, so that all of our listeners can know. Okay. Glad we got that.
We need it in the episode description.
Yeah, we'll put it in the episode description.
Nick Pollock runs baseball pitchcenter.com and has a gun.
He's gonna ask us to censor this entire thing. We don't know about his stance on guns. Don't, if you're pro-gun, don't worry. If you're anti-gun, don't worry. What are we doing?
Would you just tell me what you thought of his point already?
So, yes.
The ritual, the drama, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
The guns.
We have to be consistent. And that's what he was saying. Consistency is what matters. If you can't shoot three people between the eyes with three shots in a row, then why are you even shooting a gun? I think that's what the point he's trying to make. And I couldn't agree more, honestly. I do love that he like kind of shut us out. He's like, you guys know with your podcast, because as any good Campri Education fan would know, we haven't missed a single weekly release ever. And this is our 46th episode. We've never missed a release. So if you are listening to this, that probably means you've listened to all 46 or 45 before this. So good for you. And if you haven't, then I'm deeply ashamed that you've made it this far into the episode. Please go back and listen to all of them in order up to here. So you'll understand all of our amazing inside jokes. I haven't touched on his point yet, Ian, and that's because I'm not as smart as you. I don't have a lot of ideas lined up. And I'm happy to go on to the next point from Ray, if you are as well.
I've got one. This makes me think of one thing.
Of course you do. All right, let's go, smart guy. Okay. What do you got?
This was something you brought up in the last episode where you're like, I wish I had what baseball fans had, where they just seem happy sitting in the stands and like watching this slow game and like just being a part of this community. And I do think it's a strange community, it's a weird community, but I mean, like, you know, being in a stadium with a bunch of people like rooting for one thing, you know, like that can be an exciting, like, cathartic experience,
right?
And I think that I was thinking about that a lot this past week, and I think that it's a surrender. And I think like real diehard fandom, where it's just like you're just like a regular Joe. And I'm not talking about like Jack Nicholson on the sidelines of the fucking Lakers, but maybe you're a season ticket holder. You've got hats and shirts and jerseys and like memorabilia in your house. I think that in a sense, like baseball and maybe sports generally, like, infantilize us in a way that like they really allow us to romanticize our youth, in the sense that like a baseball season keeps open and like alive this potential for potential, this idea that like anything can happen at the start of the season. It's like, this could be the year that like amazing things happens, that kind of gets lost in us as like, as we grow older. So it's a way to kind of keep that magic of youth alive, no matter where you are in life. And like, there's always that excitement that, you know, like this moment could be like a home run. Like, this could be the year we win the pennant. This could be the team that we beat to get to the championship or whatever. And I think that like we touched on this a little bit last episode, but I think that not everyone gets to experience those moments. Like, it's experience of these exciting events through proxy. And I think that fandom is a surrender. So it's like, well, I can't do it, so I can be excited when they do it. And that's kind of the same thing.
That's interesting. Because when at first you started talking about this, I was drawn immediately to this comparison of like a zero stakes political rally. Like, I've never felt this way going to a sporting event, but I've definitely went to like a Bernie Sanders rally. And I was like, yes, we are all here for the same exact cause. And you get like this overwhelming feeling of like communal belonging, which I think is like so important and so many people crave it. I mean, that's like why I think so many people have been religious and like at church. And I think that's the experience you have, like a bunch of people singing hymns or any kind of like prayer or like group prayer or group song, like in a religious context. It's like the same kind of thing. I think it's why like cults, you know, again, to his point, like they do so well, is because it's a bunch of people like you, and as you said, like with a shared objective and like sharing it like positively. And I can see like that being such a drawing human force, you know, just like you have this need in you to belong to like a group of people, and all of you have like and like being in a stadium, like being in Yankee Stadium and having like everyone, virtually everyone in the stands, like being a Yankees fan, was like really intense. Cause like I was going there and I like de facto, you know, I don't care about either team, but like I'm in Yankee Stadium. I live in New York. Like, all right, I'm rooting for the Yankees, you know? And so like just being there with everyone else, I was like, yeah, this is really cool. Like, my team's winning. Like, I'm excited. I'm pumped. It's cool. I think that to me seems like the real draw for like a lot of people, is like a sense of community for something that is virtual. Like, it is inconsequential. Like, there, it doesn't really matter. So you get to just feel like you belong for a moment, and then like, and then life just continues without like anything of significance changing.
I like that last part, like this idea that like it's zero stakes. You have the potential to experience all of the euphoria and take none of the risk.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like linguistically they've studied this, and this is fascinating. When a team is winning, when a team wins a game and you're a fan of the team, you'll say, "We won." But when the team loses, you'll say, "They lost." And I think it's so funny that like the mirage of community ends the moment that the team loses. And then you're united in your hatred of these people that 10 minutes ago you fucking loved. So I think it's just, I don't know. There's like a schizophrenia in sports that I just can't wrap my head around, and it feels innately hypocritical. But I don't know, man. Honestly, like I'll be completely honest. Hearing Nick talk about it, it's like I don't know. I kind of wish I cared as much about anything that as you cared about baseball. You know?
Yeah, the passion like really shines through, and it's like, I mean, I think that's like, that's just like what charisma is generally, right? Like just like people talking about things they care about with passion and like, I don't know, because I know you and I talked about this like a little off air. Like every single camp we do, we come in and we're the ignorant people. Like we come in here, we don't know the subject and we don't get to be like that excited about stuff. What I mean to say is like we don't get to talk with passion about things we know about so in depth, but like obviously, like hearing Nick talk about something he is very intimately familiar with, and I mean, and to the same extent to Ray as well. Like you just like hear them talking about it, you're like, man, like it is so cool to like hear these people like talk about things that they really know and love. It's infectious, and like it makes me question. And like I think you were just questioning too, like, are we missing out by not liking it more? And I think like maybe, you know, and like that. I mean, that's like the ultimate question with like the camp and with like the podcast, but also like with this campus, like, should I try and like baseball more? Like, would my life be better if I did? Like, I don't know. I don't like it now. Should I try to like it? You know?
And you know, we talked about, speaking of ways to like it, like we asked Ray, our next guest, point blank, like what's more fun, fantasy baseball or Rio baseball? And you know, he kind of was like, you know, looked to the side a little bit, and he's like, I like my fantasy team more than I like
sport. Yeah,
but he kind of talked about this, like I don't know, it's weird because at some point we made this shift and like now just watching isn't enough, like now you need to kind of have stakes, and it's weird. It's, I feel like it's kind of disseminated this support of a team and to the support of baseball as an institution. And turning your, I don't know, like the fantasy of you being the manager, like we've shifted away from like fandom and now it's like, ooh, I'd be a good manager. Like, look at my skills, and how that's affected fandom, but also how that's potentially affected the game. So, you know, Ray was a super fascinating guy to talk to. He's my hometown hero. He's up here with me in Boston. So let's hear what he had to say.
Answer, there's a gray line or sort of a cousin of the fantasy baseball industry and the, you know, and more of the pure analytics industry. And, you know, at Baseball HQ, we, you know, kind of use one as a tool to solve the other. You know, we're doing analysis that says, you know, this player has this batting average, but he really deserves that batting average based on, you know, these other sub statistics that we look at. And you can apply those same statistics to our fantasy games as much as you can to, you know, actual baseball. And there have been any number of examples of that, of people doing the analysis in the public space and then getting hired to go do it for the teams in the private space who want to get better at winning. And there's been any number of movement of, you know, theories and people and strategies sort of back and forth in that space. So, I mean, that's one influence that isn't always directly from the fantasy space, but there are some synergies there because in some sense we're all trying to solve the same problem with different information or different tools, different perspectives. But we get to the point where the on the field product, if you're asking, is sort of influenced by what the fantasy players want to see. It seems to me like a bridge too far, but you know, I don't have my crystal ball's on the fritz too, so.
So when I first heard him say this, like I could not help but think of this comparison to Dungeons and Dragons, and like not like some kind of like role playing aspect, you know, because it's like and not him, but fantasy sports in general. It's like, because it is basically like he talks about like the problems we're trying to solve in baseball. You know, like it's clear that the whole community sees that there are issues within the sport, and that it seems like through statistics, through analytics, they're all trying to like solve some problems, like whatever the problems that like everyone agrees on, like they're all just like, okay, how can we fix this? How can we make this better? And apparently there've been a lot of adjustment or like suggestions made by these amateur fantasy players that then get like adopted by the Major League Baseball. So now, like through fantasy baseball, we see the actual baseball leagues themselves making real gameplay changes. That because fantasy people are like, well, actually, like we can see like do like all of this complicated statistics to see, oh, this could be better, this could be different, and make suggestions. And like I don't know how much of it makes actual gameplay changes, actually. So I will walk that back a little bit. But I at least know that in terms of the way that they talk and think about the game has absolutely changed. Like I remember like Nick saying like he invented some measure of how you, or some difference in how you measure strikes from just striking out versus
swinging and striking and not swinging and striking.
Exactly, yeah. And like that was a statistic that no one really kept track of until I guess him and Pitcher List, they were the first people to do that. And now that's like apparently a metric everywhere, which is fascinating. Like that's changing the way we all think about this game. And it's crazy that that happened in the world of fantasy sports.
Yeah, and you know, I would be remiss. No, that's not the right word. But anyway, I would be, I guess, suspicious if it didn't. And when we say change the game, I don't mean like they're going to be, you know, introduce the fourth strike and you're out. But I guess I do mean like through the virtue of changing the way that you think about the game, I think that will impact the way that you play the game. I mean, look at, or even the way like you manage a team or something like that, which I think counts as,
right,
as impacting gameplay. Like, and that was the whole point. That was the whole plot of the movie Moneyball. It is just like,
right,
here's this new way to think about this. And fantasy football, to the extent that it is, you know, just evolved now where it's this almost this like industrial machine of pleasure. That's not totally the right way to put it. But I mean, no, I don't know how, but they figured out a way to make statistics fun. It's just, yeah. But that's what it is. It's like I don't know. It's like the fantasy baseball to me is essentially the equivalent of the first person that learned how to spell boobs on a calculator. Okay.
Oh my god. Well, it wow.
They made it fun. I don't know how they did it. I to this day I haven't spelled boobs on a calculator in a long time, and frankly, I'm a little sad about that.
Well, I think the really interesting thing is that Ray had said, like I guess that Major League Baseball has taken some fantasy people and got actual jobs within the MLB because they've done like their what effectively was like a make-believe game. You know, they're just like, oh, what if I played this person on this thing and like I'll do the statistics and whatever, and like they gamified this very analytical, like technical side, and like somehow, I don't know, got like real careers. Like that's fascinating, yeah, to me. Like it's, you're just like, can you imagine? Like, I don't know. I really cannot leave for some reason this Dungeons and Dragons a thing. But can you imagine like leading like the most epic Dungeons and Dragons league with you and your friends, and then all of a sudden like the writers for Game of Thrones are like, we need you to write season 8 of Game of Thrones. Only you have the storytelling abilities, you know, or like something like that. But like, apparently that happens,
yeah,
in this world of baseball. And I guess, you know, there's a lot more money and it's a totally different thing than writing, you know, fiction or whatever. But I don't know. It seems similar.
Well, it's better than fiction. It's real. You know, like that's what's crazy. It's like, it's not fiction. It's like, you know, they turned, you know, it's, I don't know, it's like Tom Clancy being tapped to become an actual spy, right? but like, good for them. Like, that's amazing. And I don't want anybody listening, by the way, I don't want anybody listening to think that like this is a dig at like, you know, nerddom or like Dungeons and Dragons or anything like that. I'll have everybody at home know who's not watching this. I'm wearing a suit jacket with a Dragon Ball Z t-shirt. I'm calling it Swaggin' Ball Z, or Super Saiyan Swag, or Destructo Drip, or
Boo.
Drip Meha Meha. those are all A+ puns. Especially, I'm sorry, Destructo Drip? That's fucking amazing.
I don't get it. Is it a pun? Is it just a new thing?
You know what? Tell the real Dragon Ball Z fans out there, all right, forget this loser, forget this Yamcha, all right, we're out of here, okay? Anyway, that being said, we're going to end. You've got nothing left to say. I need to get out of what I just did. Ray.
This is your
shut up.
Life jacket here. This is your parachute as you fall out of the plane that you flew into the cliff.
As the swaggin' ball Z jet explodes.
Yes.
So, we talked a lot with Ray about, you know, our suspicion of baseball, and we're like, I don't know, we can't get into it. He actually, you know, talk about a guy that puts in the work. He listened to the episode and was like, you know, I thought I was going to have to come on here and defend baseball, but he said we actually got a lot of stuff right, and that felt pretty cool, so we're going to play that clip for you now.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
It's funny because for a couple of guys with 10 days of experience in this area, you've actually pinpointed a bunch of the problems correctly. Baseball clearly has a problem of not enough action these days, and they call it we call it the three true outcomes: the walks, strikeouts, and home runs. They're the things that are sort of, you know, the predetermined outcome. You know, if the ball lands over the fence, it's a home run. Three strikes and you're out. Four balls and a walk. Everything else that happens actually on the field is a more ambiguous outcome. The guy might catch the ball, he might not catch the ball. The ground ball might get between the shortstop and the third baseman, it might not. But the strikeouts, the walks, the home runs are all incontrovertible, and there are too many of all of them. And the really fun stuff happens when the ball's on the field and someone's running to catch the ball, someone else is running around the bases, and that's the drama, that's the action, and there isn't nearly enough of it. And that is another place where maybe the powers that be are starting to figure out that that's a problem. But we're a long way from figuring out what to do about it.
It's kind of like what I was talking about when this is what he was talking about that I referenced earlier, but you know, that he, it's interesting. Like, it seems like the fantasy people understand, like, to the same or maybe more of a degree than the MLB people, like, what the issues are with the game. And they're like the collective, like, issues they're trying to solve is like this kind of stuff. You know, it's like, it's boring. It's a boring game. And we know why it's boring, because of these three true outcomes. And so it's interesting to see this, like, incredible analytic fandom saying, like, these are the issues, and maybe, like, propose solutions that might one day be implemented. I know he was talking about, and Nick was talking about this as well, like, changes that they want to make to the game that they think would make it actually a better sport. I know Ray talked about there's a proposition of, I think it was Ray, talked about moving the pitcher's mound back maybe 2 or 3 feet, just so that there's a fraction of a second more that the hitter can decide whether or not to swing, with the idea of, like, the ball will just get hit more, which might make the game a little bit more entertaining. And I know Nick had some suggestions too that I'm totally blanking on right now.
Yeah, well, I know that he said that it takes on average, you have to wait 1:47 on average to hear somebody, to hear the ball get hit, to see the ball get hit, which is like what everyone's there for.
Right.
So, I mean, you're waiting like hours and hours and hours to see it happen. And then if it does get hit, maybe it's a foul. Maybe it gets, you know, caught immediately. So, and a lot of the times you can tell. Like, a lot of the times you can tell right as soon as it comes off the bat whether or not it's catchable. And you're like, it's out, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of anticlimax. And it's interesting because, you know, you and I had a brief conversation about it earlier. I told you my thought on this. I once read that the novel was basically just a technology. It was a form of technology, a means of disseminating information and entertainment. And, you know, readership is down because book purchases are down, you know, because there is less of a need to receive information like that way. You know, now we have TV, we have radio, we have phones, we have movies, et cetera, et cetera. And it helped me to better understand baseball's boredom if I looked at baseball through this technology framework, where, like, baseball was essentially a form of entertainment that was invented with the technology available to it at the time. And we've kind of technologically progressed past this point where baseball could, you know, be interesting, where even the attention span has evolved to the extent that maybe, you know, baseball's still three strikes and they're out. Well, shit, maybe there should be two strikes. Maybe there should be 7 innings, not 9. Maybe there should be 5 innings, you know, who knows? Especially if the season's that long and the games are that long, you know, reflective of a time when there was a lot, when there was nothing to do but watch baseball.
Well, you know what's interesting is I don't know a ton about cricket, but I do know that cricket had similar reforms to what we're talking about here with baseball. Like it was very, it was like an all day thing or something like that. And then cricket viewership and fandom started plummeting, or not plummeting, but you know, waning. I can't remember exactly when it was, but they started introducing, I believe it was in India, they started introducing this new form of cricket that is the cricket that we know today, which is a lot faster. I really don't know the rules. I just know like the talking points for this. And that's basically that, like, it's a lot faster. There's a lot more things that happen. And then this newer version only takes like 2 hours, 3 hours, something like that. And then this one was at first hated by like the old guard, but then like surely but slowly it started to get played in surrounding areas. It started to get played in Australia. It started to get played in UK. And now it's like the dominant force to the point where like cricket, I believe, is one of the largest sports in the world now, second, I think, to soccer, if I'm
football?
Not to soccer. If I'm not mistaken.
I meant like football with a U.
What's funny is I almost said football too, and I was like, oh no, that's wrong. I was like, they call it soccer. Yeah. But I think that like there's a parallel here. And I'm wondering if like maybe baseball, like it's clear that like the true baseball fans here see the issue, you know, that it's boring. And like maybe they should take a page out of the cricket book. I mean, it's similar enough already, honestly. Like, why not just do it?
Well, you know what's really exciting is, and this is something that's interesting, you know, like baseball's long, it's storied, and for a long time, baseball was a battle between the owners and the players. You know, it's a battle that still continues, but that's where, like, power was, like, wrested between back and forth, these two forces. And, like, I feel like now with the democratization of entertainment generally, it's shifted maybe to the players, and they're like, we'd like to see this. In a way that's never happened before. And that's exciting. And that's interesting. And it's funny because, like Ray had mentioned, the powers that be were like, I think we talked about this in part one, just riding on this America's pastime narrative. Like, that's what they just, you know, when in doubt, America's pastime it out. Like, you love baseball. It's America. It's so American to love baseball. But it's, you know, it's so funny. It's like, there's, I think, when we talk like this, about baseball, I think it reveals maybe this like end of history anxiety. And I think that the steroids crisis in baseball of the 90s and early aughts reflects this like boredom with the end, reaching the end of like human limitation without enhancement, without medical enhancement, biomedical, bioengineering, like transhumanist. And when I say transhumanism, I mean like people that are half robot. I don't mean, you know, like I'm not referring to trans people as transhumanist. But I just wanted to put that out there. I was like, wait a minute, gotta clarify. I think that the 2000s and the home run excitement, especially, which was only possible because of like, you know, testosterone, or not testosterone, but steroids, and basically like, you know, like again, like artificial human enhancement. I wonder what the future holds for baseball. In terms of like, what are we going to see 10, 20 years from now? Like if Elon Musk's Neuralink takes off and rich people, because they're going to be the first persons to have access to it. If fucking baseball players with their $40 million salaries can get a fucking brain chip and they can see the ball coming, or they can like somehow know in advance because of this, like they've got Terminator eye and they can see like the angle of the curve as it comes over the plate. I mean, is this something baseball is going to start to have to address, or is this something it's going to have to embrace? You know, like, so I don't know. It's certainly no slouch when it comes to reinventing itself. I don't know if I'll ever become a fan. Maybe if they get some like, you know, half robot players, fuck, I'll start.
Well, to go back on one of the points we were touching about a second ago about the democratization, like, I think you're right. Like, a lot of content has been, like, democratized. Like YouTube, for instance, is, like, user-generated content almost to, like, maybe that's not totally fair, but, like, at least to some extent, you know? And, like, it's interesting because I think when we look at fantasy baseball, where it's not necessarily, it's, like, democratized past the point of the players being the ones in control. Now I think it's the fans that have these insane algorithms to determine their players, or I'm sorry, to determine each player's abilities and like all of their like performance capacities, you know, and like now they're like they're recognizing through statistics basically that like, oh, this one player is very likely to do X, Y, and Z that's going to result in this outcome for the game. And like they're basically treating it like the stock market, betting a ton of money and like whatever. And it's like the same way that like hedge fund managers put huge bets on like the performance of certain companies. Like some of these bettors, I have to imagine, are putting huge amounts of money on the outcomes of certain games in the exact same way. And it's changing probably the way that people are playing. I just imagine it has to. But it's also like from a less like sinister perspective, it's also just like sending messages to the Major League Baseball people. It's like, oh, well, people want this, like to the points that, again, to Ray's point, the three true outcomes, like these three things we know are boring. Let's make it more interesting. And like, what can we do? And I think that's the fans that are like now the ones who are deciding that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we had this experience. I'm glad we had the opportunity to talk to Ray and to talk to Nick, because I don't know about you, but my perspective on baseball absolutely has changed. And this is an idea we're going to hash out to the fullest extent of the law in the absolute Camp Reeducation Specialist segment, How Brain, How Feel.
Hello and welcome to How Brain, How Feel, our favorite end of camp check-in to see if and how our minds have changed or if we've just become more convinced of our initial preconceptions. Ian, hello. How are you in this fabulous segment? Did you see our new intro video? Hopefully that's done by now. But, we'll see. But baseball.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Ian, how do you feel then, at least, about your 2-week immersion into baseball? What have you learned? How are you feeling? All the above.
I feel like I get the appeal now. Learning about the history of baseball was fucking cool. Honestly, it was amazing. Like, there are a lot of incredibly interesting, fascinating characters, a lot of, to dramatize it in the vein of all of the sports writers who have written about baseball over the years. There are a lot of villains. There are a lot of heroes. There's a lot of, there's a lot of drama. There's a lot of scandal. The history of baseball is incredible. And I'm glad that we have it. And I think it's great that we have that fabric kind of woven into the history of the country. And I don't think I'll become a baseball fan, but I definitely appreciate it as like a cultural landmark in a way that I didn't before. I think before I was like, this is a fucking nuisance. This is like a stain on the cultural conscience. And now I'm like, no, this is cool. I fuck with baseball, even though I don't actually fuck with baseball. You know what? And right after I say that, I'm like, do I feel that way? I don't a little bit, but I mean, I want to hear what you have to say. There's going to be some back and forth, but kind of the bulk of your brain feeling laid on me.
So like, what percent of my brain feels do you want though? Like, you say bulk, like, are we talking like 65, 75, 85%? We want more or less?
Leave out the boring stuff. I just want the interesting bits.
Oh, I don't think I have anything interesting. we'll have to see. Well, I'll just hop in and we can decide afterwards.
All that stuff about the rules, I don't want to hear that.
Oh, hold on. Let me cross out some stuff. So, all right. Baseball. I think I find it a little bit more charming than I think I used to find it, which is like an interesting choice of words even for myself, but like I feel like that's the best way to describe it. Like, it's like kind of has like this weird, quaint history now. I don't think it's like particularly cool, and I think that's why some fans probably like it, is because it's like, I don't think it is cool. Maybe I'm wrong about other people's feelings about it, but I think where I'm landing on it, like, I asked this earlier, like, am I missing out by not liking it? And I think about this, like, generally about things. Like, would my life be better if I had an active appreciation towards X, Y, or Z? Like, am I missing out on positive, to use like the economics concept, like utility, like by not enjoying this, like, or am I better off maybe just ignoring it and developing like skills or interests in something else? And like, I honestly don't know, but I'm leaning towards, I think it requires too much of an investment in time to like understand the rules before I can start appreciating it. And I think that that's like, it's a little insurmountable at this point, like this late in my life. I know I'm only 30. I could like definitely, you know, learn the rules before I die with enough time to probably enjoy it. But I don't know. I think there's like definitely some like psychological stuff like in my development as like a human that like makes me averse to sports generally, that I'm not sure at this point that I'm willing to do whatever amount of psychological work is required for me to develop the interest earnestly.
Yeah, it's weird because like we were talking about in the episode as well, there is absolutely an aspect of sports fandom that's woven into the self-concept. And it's just like weird. I'm like, I don't, this isn't a thread I want or need.
Right.
Like, I don't like the pattern that emerges once this is in there. And I tried it out. I did. I think I talked to you about this previously. Like I tried it out with football. It's like, I'm going to learn about football. I'm going to learn about the positions, the players, the mechanics, like what's good, what's bad, like the difference between, you know, zone and screen and like a run offense versus a pass offense and like why one is valued over the other. I talk about imposter syndrome. I was like, I don't like hearing the words that are coming out of my mouth. And I think the same would be true of baseball, you know, like even saying like the history of baseball is interesting, and it is. I do feel like I'm LARPing as a baseball fan. It'll be cool that now maybe I'll have some trivia to carry with me, but I do feel like baseball is a private club. You know, you're rewarded for all of the drudgery that you do, and that you get to talk to other baseball fans about baseball and feel connected to the game. I'm reminded of this episode of Seinfeld when Jerry falls asleep on the subway and he wakes up and the guy across from him is butt naked, and everybody's moved to the other end of the train, and he's like, oh great. And he ends up getting into an argument with the guy that's naked on the subway, and he's like, you know, the naked guy's reading the newspaper, and I think Jerry goes, well, at least let me borrow your sports section. And he's like, I'm gonna get to that next, I gotta read about the Mets. And him and Jerry start talking about the Mets, and like by the end of this subway ride, you know, the guy puts his clothes on and then they go to Coney Island together. And it's just like, you know, weird how well they bond about all these different elements, all these different players, each individual, you know, person's character and personality, their skill level, whether or not they're going to get in trouble, whether or not they're going to get injured, you know, like what are their chances? If you lose 30 games in the beginning, you could still fucking, you know, win the championship, which is crazy to me that you could just lose 30 games and still be eligible to fucking take the whole thing home. So I don't know. I think there's something to that. I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's certainly interesting.
You know, I wonder if like the camaraderie that you can get from sports, like the no investment sense of like you and me are on the same page. Like I get you because we're both Yankees fans or whatever. If that is at odds with the pretension of being like an artsy hipster type or whatever we like considered ourselves like in high school and probably still somewhat do to these days or to now, like you have to be like somewhat exclusive, don't you, to like be cool? And I'm wondering if maybe now, like just examining this light, like if maybe sports aren't cool in like that sense of the word, but they might be like they're mainstream. And maybe it's just, it's too mainstream to be air quotes cool. Like the same way, like I was talking about before, like why I chose foosball as like the game that like I was going to get really good at, you know, and in college and whatever, you know, and like, why did I choose that? It's like, well, yeah, like there's not a lot of people play it. I mean, there's definitely the aspect that like, since not a lot of people play it, I was inherently like pretty good compared to anyone I'd ever play. So like I would win a lot. But like also I didn't get to play with that many people who were interested, you know? So I don't know. I'm wondering if like that's that issue of self-concept that you were talking about earlier, if that's kind of like where that, or if that at least plays a role in that.
there's a Freudian term for this that I can't remember, but it's like, let's just say it's called like the I don't know, the denialism of small differences or something like that. I believe actually that might be what it's called. Regardless, it's this idea that like we crave community, but you want to find a way to differentiate yourself within that community. So it's like, I'm sure, I mean, just like there's the, you know, I heard of the band before they were cool person.
Right.
In sports, it's like, I recognize this person's potential. In, you know, the art scene, the same guy exists in sports, just in a different capacity.
Right.
So it's weird. Like anywhere you go, you're going to find the same people. Like the only thing that's different is going to be what you talk about and what you think is important. So.
Right. Yeah. I think that's really poignant, man. And I think that's a really good place to leave it for this episode. With that, just want to thank our amazing guests again, Nick Pollock of Pitcher List and Ray Murphy of Baseball HQ. And in fact, why don't we go ahead and let you hear right now where you can find them.
Go to pitcherlist.com. Follow me on Twitter at pitcherlist. If you listen to this and you're curious about more, just ask any questions there. I have my DMs open.
Sure. Our website is baseballhq.com. You can check it out there. We're primarily a subscription site, but there's a bunch of free content we put out every week that gives you an opportunity to take a look behind the wall at what we're doing there. There's a free weekly newsletter you can sign up for. On Twitter, you can follow me at RayHQ, where I periodically tweet out some things on the website or that I've written or other insights or things that make me scream at my iPad while I'm watching a game on a particular night. So, you know, there's a few places to look.
So if you're interested in baseball or fantasy sports, I can't imagine two better resources to kind of get started. Or if you're not into it and you know someone else who is, recommend them for them. They were great. We loved them. Romantically. All right. But anyway, we played it at the top of the episode. We're super excited for you to hear it. Without any further ado, here is a man and a song that needs no introduction, though we will introduce it. It's Sean McVary's Yellow Is Her Color. It slaps. Stick around and wait for the end for more instructions from us.
Yellow is the color, watched you turn into another when she walks by. Never knew such a grief, but darling, you're the you love me when I'm feeling strange, knowing that I'll find my feet again. Oh, from the
Special thanks to our guests, Nick Pollock of Pitcher List and Ray Murphy of Baseball HQ. To hear this week's interviews in their entirety, become a monthly supporter and join our Patreon, where you'll get access to those and tons of other fun goodies.
Here at camp, we love talking over great music. If you want to hear more amazing music like the song you're hearing now, then follow our playlist on Spotify.
We hope you enjoyed this camp as much as we did, but don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and everywhere else, and stay tuned for our next camp, where the unthinkable happens.
Oi! Next time on Camp Reeducation, I'll bust your fucking mouth in, I will!
Let's just leave it there.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right.